the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get started, I did drop my promo video for my upcoming music video called Victim Culture. So you could go ahead and check out that promo video on my website, katietrop.net, or on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/katietrop. Real talk, if you just Google Katie Trop, you're going to find out. It's real easy to find my motherfucking music. That's for damn sure. And I'll be dropping that music video on Tuesday, so look out for it. But in great, amazing sports news. Longhorn fans, we have some light. Arch Manning has signed with the University of Texas, y'all. Hook 'em horns. Arch Manning is our future quarterback here in Austin, Texas. I've been putting it out there. He must be listening to the show, and he was all like, I don't want to piss that Katie Trop bitch off. I'm going to go play for the University of Texas. I'm so fucking excited about this. I mean, this doesn't affect this year at all because he's still a senior in high school. This affects next year. And hell, who knows? He may not even play next year because it's going to be his first year. I expect him to play, but you never know what's going to happen in college. College football is way, way different than the pros. Because three guys could be battling it out for that quarterback position. But Arch Manning, he is one of the top-rated quarterbacks coming out of high school of all time. He's one of, I think he's like, a five-star recruit. Like, he's basically, when you break him down statistically, he's like a five-star. He checks every box, and there's only been three quarterbacks ever throughout the history of college football to ever be a quarterback of that caliber coming out of high school, and that was Vince Young, who was a Texas Longhorn. Is it Ewers, who's on our roster now? I believe it's Ewers who was the second one, but regardless, it was a Longhorn, and I'm pretty sure it was Ewers. And who could potentially be our starting quarterback for this year. And now we've got Arch Manning. I'm so excited about this. Obviously, he hasn't proven anything. He hasn't played it down. But man, as a Texas Longhorns fan, it is so nice to finally see us have a future at quarterback, because we have not had a good quarterback since Colt McCoy and Vince Young. We got spoiled with those two, one after the other. And we haven't had shit since. And so it's very nice to finally see that the Texas Longhorns have a future. And hopefully Arch Manning is going to take us back to the promised land and get us another national championship, something that we haven't had in many years now. So this is great, great news for the Longhorns. But we still have this year ahead of us. But this is great. You know, I've been talking about it. I've been hoping it was going to happen. And here he is. Arch Manning has decided to sign with the Texas Longhorns, and that is our quarterback of the future. So hook 'em horns, motherfuckers. All right, let's talk some college baseball World Series, even though it's a very, very disappointing end to me, in my opinion, and we'll get there. And if you know, I'm just talking about the Longhorns, so if you have been paying attention to the College Baseball World Series, you know why I'm not looking forward to this matchup. So let's get started. Where we left off was in the third round. So we had Oklahoma go up against Texas A&M, and Oklahoma just stomped A&M. They kicked their ass 5-1. As a matter of fact, Oklahoma has just been flying. Since the Big 12 tournament, this stupid-ass baseball team has just been killing it, and it's pissing me the fuck off because I wish they would fucking lose already. So Oklahoma, they moved on to the national championship, and they are the representative on Bracket 1. Let's move over to Bracket 2. So in the third round, it ended up being Ole Miss versus Arkansas. And Arkansas ended up winning the first matchup. And so when that happens, there needed to be another matchup because Arkansas was the loser team coming into this matchup against Ole Miss. And so Arkansas ended up winning that matchup against Ole Miss, and then they played again yesterday, and Ole Miss got the win 2-0. And so our national championship in baseball is going to be Oklahoma versus Ole Miss. So I am a huge Ole Miss fan this weekend because game one, it begins on Saturday. And so we're going to have either two games. It's best of three series, of course. So it's game one is on Saturday, game two is on Sunday, and if necessary, game three is going to be on Monday. So go Ole Miss. Please, please knock Oklahoma out. But I'm going to keep it real. If I were to, you know, just look at this objectively and take my Oklahoma Sooner hatred out of this, I unfortunately think Oklahoma is going to win this. And that's just because they're playing great baseball. They've been playing great baseball, like I said, since the Big 12 tournament. And I mean, not just like baseball where they're winning, like they're kicking the shit out of every single opponent. And so it's really difficult for me to pick against them at this point in time. And I unfortunately think Oklahoma is going to win. But you damn right, I am a huge Ole Miss fan this weekend. And I really, really hope they can upset Oklahoma. But I would not be shocked if we see the goddamn Sooners as the national champions. And I mean, like, if Oklahoma wins, I wouldn't be shocked if they sweep this shit. So we'll see what happens. I'm not looking forward to it, but maybe we'll get lucky and we'll see an upset. But if I'm betting on this matchup, I'm going, unfortunately, with the Oklahoma Sooners. All right, so let's move on to the NBA draft that went on last night. Let's go ahead and name off all the first round picks. Like I said on Friday, not that impressive of a draft this year. Nobody who really, really stands out other than Paolo Banchero. He was the guy I was looking at to be the best pick in this draft. And apparently the Magic agreed with me. It looked like leading all the way up to this draft, probably the last 2 weeks for sure, Jabari Smith was the dude that they were talking about who was going to end up going to the Magic. But lo and behold, the Magic, they played a magic trick on everybody, and they ended up drafting Paolo Banchero. So I think that's a great pickup by them. You never know what's going to happen with the Magic. They're a very poorly run organization. But they have had those flashes of greatness where they have drafted some good guys who they end up usually trading in the end or not re-signing in free agency. So we'll see what happens with him. But I think that was the better route for them to go, especially with they've got a really young team. I feel like the Magic are kind of missing like one or two solid veteran players who could help them out and take it to the next level. But Banchero, he's definitely going to be going to be a great piece, and I think that was a good pick for them. So then at number two, the Oklahoma City Thunder ended up picking Chet Holmgren. Number three, the Rockets ended up going with Jabari Smith. Number four, the Sacramento Kings drafted Keegan Murray. Number five, the Detroit Pistons, they drafted Jaden Ivey. Number six, the Indiana Pacers drafted Benedict Mathurin. Number seven, the Portland Trail Blazers drafted Shaedon Sharpe. And that's Shannon Sharpe's kid, if you don't know. And at number eight, the New Orleans Pelicans drafted Dyson Daniels out of the G League. At number nine, the San Antonio Spurs drafted Jeremy Sochan. Number 10, the Washington Wizards drafted Johnny Davis. At number 11, the New York Knicks drafted Wasmane Dieng. I'm sorry if I fucked that name up, but I have no idea how to pronounce that. At number 12, the Oklahoma City Thunder picked again, and this time they went with Jalen Williams. Number 13, the New Orleans Hornets, or I'm sorry, sorry, the Charlotte Hornets, who used to be New Orleans Hornets. Charlotte Hornets, they at number 13 drafted Jalen Duren. At number 14, the Cleveland Cavaliers drafted Oshai Agbaji. At number 15, the Charlotte Hornets drafted Mark Williams. At number 16, the Atlanta Hawks drafted AJ Griffin. At number 17, the Houston Rockets drafted Tari Eason. Number 18, the Chicago Bulls drafted Dalen Terry. At number 19, the Minnesota Timberwolves drafted Jake LaRavia. At number 20, the San Antonio Spurs pick again. They drafted Malachi Branham. At number 21, the Denver Nuggets drafted Christian Braun. At number 22, the Memphis Grizzlies drafted Walker Kessler. Number 23, the 76ers drafted David Roddy. Number 24, the Milwaukee Bucks drafted Marjan Beauchamp. At number 25, the Spurs picked again, and they drafted Blake Wesley. Number 26, the Dallas Mavericks drafted Wendell Moore Jr., who was then traded to Houston. Then number 27, the Miami Heat drafted Nikolai Jovic. Number 28, the Golden State Warriors drafted Patrick Baldwin Jr. Number 29, the Grizzlies drafted Ty Washington Jr. And at number 30, the Oklahoma City Thunder drafted Peyton Watson. And the Lakers actually did end up making a move right before the draft, basically. They did move up into the second round for the 35th overall pick, and they ended up picking Max Christie out of Michigan State. He's a pretty solid player, but with the Lakers, I'm still not really sure what's going to happen with them this year. But I can't really complain about that pick. They also picked up a couple of free agents, rookie free agents, right after the draft had ended, and they picked up Shareef O'Neal, who is Shaquille O'Neal's son, and then they also picked up Scottie Pippen Jr., who is Scottie Pippen's son. So we'll see how those two fare. I mean, you know, undrafted free agents are always up in the air. Hell, they may not even make the roster, or they may end up just going down to, I forget what they call the farm system right now off the top of my head and in the NBA, but you never know with the undrafted free agents. They may end up doing nothing, or they may end up doing something. Anything could happen with them. And, but I am, I'm happy they actually did end up getting a draft pick, because, it was looking like they weren't going to get some young blood, and they definitely need some young blood over on the, Los Angeles Lakers team. And then also last night, Kemba Walker, was traded by the New York Knicks to the Detroit Pistons. The Knicks don't really have much going on. We'll see what happens with that team this year. But the Pistons, I think, are getting a good solid player. You know, Kemba, he has his moments. It's just he gets injured a lot. So we'll see what happens. Detroit is a very young team, so they could probably use a veteran like Kemba. Like I said, Kemba's he's a solid point guard. Just he's got to stay healthy. But I think Detroit's getting a good player out of that. And then this week in baseball, we had a lot going on. So starting on Monday night, Cole, he had a no-no through 8 innings. Playing for the Yankees, and then in that same game, they did get the win, and the New York Yankees became the first team to 50 wins this season. Actually, as of today, they have 52 wins, and that's by far and away number one in baseball today, because I believe the Mets are in second place with like 46 wins, 47 wins maybe. But they're still trailing the Yankees. And the Yankees became the first and only team so far to hit 50 wins, man. The Yankees are on fire this season. And then also on Tuesday night, Shohei Ohtani, he ended up hitting 2 home runs and 8 RBIs versus the Kansas City Royals. And it ended up being a loss. You know, it was a very back-and-forth game. But that stat line for Ohtani, 8 RBIs is actually the most he's had in one game his entire career. So that was a huge night for him hitting. But in that same game, Witt Jr., he ended up also hitting 2 home runs and also having the game-winning home run versus the Angels. So it was a back-and-forth game, and Ohtani had a great game. But unfortunately, his huge night behind the plate ended up in a loss anyways. And then also that same night, for the Tampa Bay Rays, Paredes, he had 3 home runs in one game against the Yankees, and helped the Tampa Bay Rays end up getting 1 of the wins, not getting swept in Tampa. So good for them. Speaking of Ohtani, on Tuesday night, like I said, he had probably his best hitting night as a major league player. Well, on Wednesday night, he backed that up with a great performance pitching. He ended up having 18 strikeouts. So the first night, on Tuesday night, he had 2 home runs and 8 RBIs. The following night, dude comes out there and pitches and throws 18 strikeouts. He's the first player to ever do that in the history of the league. That's just crazy. He just came out and had two amazing games in two different ways. Like, he's just a great player, and it's just really fun to watch him. So, and that ended up actually being a win for the Angels that night. Also on Wednesday night, the Baltimore Orioles, Austin Hayes ended up hitting for a cycle in a game, and the game only went six innings because it had to be canceled due to rain. But he only needed six innings to get that cycle, so that was a big night. Last night, I watched a great game between the New York Yankees and the Houston Astros. I mean, you know this is going to be a great matchup because these two teams have played each other in the playoffs over the last couple of seasons. They've both been great teams, solid teams. But also with these two teams, there's a history. You know, the Astros, they did have their cheating scandal a few years ago, and one of the teams that ended up basically losing a series to them were the Yankees. So they're very salty about that, about their chances of a World Series being shattered due to cheating. But anyway, so this is a huge rivalry. You know it's going to be a good game. These are two great teams, two of the best teams, not only in the AL, but in the entire league. And man, it was just a great game. You know, Houston comes right out the gate, and they're up on the Yankees. I think it was like the second or third inning, and they're up 3-0. But then the Yankees catch up, and they tie the game, and it's tied at 3 for a good while. And then I think it was around the sixth inning, the Astros ended up taking a huge lead, you know, going up 6-3. And so it's the ninth inning, and I'm thinking to myself, and there's I think there's no outs. There's either no outs or one out. But I'm thinking to myself, should I just change the channel? Are the Yankees really going to come back? I'm like, well, the Yankees have been the best comeback team this year. Not only are they the best team in the league, but they are the kings of the comeback this year, the kings of the walk-off as well. And so I'm like, you know what, I'll just stick around. We'll see what happens. So there's two guys on base. Aaron Hicks comes up to bat, and boom, he just cracks one at the park. And I mean, as soon as he hit it, I was like, holy shit, we are tied. And so we are tied up at 6 in the ninth inning. And, you know, here we are. Aaron, they get a couple more outs. Looks like we're going to go into extra innings until Aaron Judge comes up to bat. Aaron Judge, man, he is having an MVP season. This guy comes up to bat. We've got two guys on base. He hits the ball out to the outfield, drops right in, and he's able to get the game-winning run. And, man, that was just such a fun game. It's games like that where I understand people who don't really like baseball. Me personally, obviously, if you've been listening to the show, I love baseball. It's not boring to me, but I see why some people get bored with it, especially just in this age where everybody needs everything now, quick, in and out, fast food lifestyle, basically for everybody here. So I get why a lot of people don't like baseball as much as when it was really popular in its heyday. But me, I've been a huge baseball fan my entire life, and I love baseball. I love when it's just like a 1-0 game. I love when it's tied at 0 all the way until the ninth inning. I love the strategies of it. And then I also love games like last night. And that game between the Yankees and the Astros is why I fucking love baseball. And anybody who thinks it's boring, if you watched last night's game, that is not a boring-ass game. That was one of the best games of baseball I've watched. And I'm looking forward to more of that because we've got a whole series of the Houston Astros versus the Yankees this weekend. So I'm expecting every game that they play each other to be basically like that. And it was just a fun-ass game. And speaking of fun-ass games, even though my team was on the losing end of it, Dansby Swanson of the Atlanta Braves, he had two home runs yesterday against my San Francisco Giants. And the other team that's on fire right now is the Atlanta Braves, the defending World Series champs, Atlanta Braves. They are just on some. Offensively, they're playing great, and their pitching is so solid, and they just played a great series against my Giants. It was back and forth between both teams. Every game was really on the edge of your seat. It looked like one of them was pretty much a blowout for the most part. I think it was the second game that they played. It was pretty much a blowout, but I mean, like, overall, they were good games. But the Braves are just on fire right now. They're only four games back of the Mets, which says a lot because the Mets have been one of the top teams, especially in the NL this season. And the Braves are hot on their tail, so we'll see where we're at after this weekend. But I expect it to be a battle for that division between the Braves and the Mets. And that was, like I said, another great series. Even though my Giants ended up on the losing end of two of those three games, it was still a great game. And I mean, speaking of runs and high scoring affairs, we've got some great, great hitters this season. And so I decided to go ahead and let you all know who the top five hitters in the league are, at least up until this point. Starting with Yordan Alvarez. He's right now, if you compile all their stats together, and I mean every single hitting stat that they have together, he is the top hitter in the league at this current point in time. So he is earning that extension he just got a couple weeks ago with the Astros. Right now, he currently has 22 home runs and 54 RBI. Right behind him is Paul Goldschmidt, who's having an excellent season himself. Right now, he's got 17 home runs and 61 RBIs and just coming in clutch for the St. Louis Cardinals. Then I've already spoken on Aaron Judge, currently, in my opinion, the leader for the AL MVP. He also leads the league. He's led the league in home runs pretty much the entire way. He's currently got 27 home runs. Yes, that leads the league, and 53 RBIs. Then you got Mike Trout following in at number four. You know, the dude who went like 0 for 23 for a while there. He's still one of the top hitters in the league. He's currently got 21 home runs and 43 RBI. And then Jose Ramirez for the Cleveland Guardians. He has just been lights out this season as well. He's got 16 home runs and 62 RBI. He's second place in total RBIs right behind Pete Alonso of the New York Mets, who's got 66 RBI. So all of those hitters I named off too, all of them except for Mike Trout, shockingly, are all hitting well above 300. I think Goldschmidt's at like 361 right now. So Goldschmidt is just very accurate this season. And look out, like, I'm talking about Judge being MVP in the AL. Goldschmidt's probably the leader in the NL just because he has been very solid for the Cardinals. But those are your top hitters right now in baseball at this point in the season. All right, and so let's move on. We had a little bit of NFL news this week. Let's go ahead and just start off with the Dick Dangling Deshaun. He ended up settling 20 of the 24 lawsuits this week. And it's really funny because that catches him in yet another lie. Just a couple weeks ago, he said he was not settling any of these because he's going to clear his name because he's innocent. And here we are, what was that? Like, that was like 2 weeks ago, and here we are like 2 weeks later, and he settled 20 of the four lawsuits, or I mean 20 of the 24 lawsuits, and there's four left still out there, so we'll see what happens with that. I kind of have a feeling that either the league stepped in or the Cleveland Browns stepped in, and we're like, okay, come on, dude. Let's start settling these suits. We need to stop this because, I mean, just basically every day there was a new barrage of something that had to do with that Deshaun Watson case. And you know the NFL wants that shit to go away. They're sick and tired of hearing about it. And so he's got four lawsuits still left out there. So we'll see what happens with him. But, you know, the it sounds like the suspension is going to be coming any day now as well. And then speaking of more lawsuits and somebody else who's been under the microscope as well is the owner of the Washington Redskins football team, Commanders, whatever the fuck their stupid name is these days. Daniel Snyder, he's been dealing with Congress. This week they questioned Roger Goodell about the situation with that team, And then they tried to get Daniel Snyder to speak, but he decided he didn't want to, and so they're going to subpoena him to speak. So he's going to have to speak at some point. He could obviously plead the fifth when he finally has to go testify. But regardless, this is just yet another thing that's been going on and lingering with the NFL. And this week, what we found out, super shocking. And by shocking, I'm being very sarcastic. I actually already discussed this theory that I had when the initial, quote, investigation that that Washington did with the sexual harassment and discrimination lawsuits. I always assumed, because it was put together by Daniel Snyder in Washington, so that's not a real investigation. He gets to handpick pick and choose what happens with everything. That's not an independent investigation, which is currently going on with the team right now. But basically what we found out is that was a whole charade, and basically it was a charade to kind of obfuscate and just throw things out there to try and get the attention off of what's really going on with this stupid loser, Daniel Snyder. So, all those emails, you remember earlier in the season when John Gruden lost his job because of those stupid, idiotic emails that got released? Yeah, that was because Daniel Snyder wants all the blame to be laid on Paul Allen, the president of the Washington Redskins at the time, who those emails going back and forth with John Gruden and all that. That's really what he was trying to do, was throw down that out there so people wouldn't really discover what's really going on at that place, and that basically Daniel Snyder is a huge sexual harasser, a huge discriminator, and none of this looks good for him. And hopefully this dude loses his team at some point. Not just because I think he's just a scumbag overall, but like he really, it's not a good look for the NFL either. And if they're going to suspend the players like Deshaun Watson or anybody else for whatever reason, I mean, hell, they suspended Tom Brady over Deflategate, and that was an absolute charade. That wasn't even real. That didn't even fucking happen. That was all fucking made up, and he missed four games over bullshit. So, you know, if we're going to suspend all the players and hold them accountable for making the league look stupid, you really need to hold Daniel Snyder accountable. Now, obviously, he owns the team. It takes a lot to take away a team from owners. But if you really think about it, a few years ago, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, basically a whole bunch of sexual harassment lawsuits were coming out about him. And what did he do? He immediately sold the team right away. He stepped down. He got the fuck out of Dodge. And that was probably the smartest move anybody can make. But unfortunately, Daniel Snyder is not smart. He's obviously a fucking idiot. And this dude's going to go down guns a-blazing. But I think at some point, the NFL is going to have to say, get the fuck out of here, dude. You're such a little twat. You're an awful owner. You have done nothing to make your team better. And you've literally, the entire time Daniel Snyder has owned Washington, they've sucked. And there's just always been so much controversy surrounding this team that this dude's got to go. We'll see what happens with that. It just keeps getting worse for him, just like it kept getting worse for Deshaun Watson. So that's the update on the two scumbags this week. Now let's actually talk about some decent football players. Starting off with Rob Gronkowski, man. He decided to retire. This is the second time he's retired. I actually believe him this time around because, you know, if you've watched Gronk's career, that dude has taken a beating. But for sure, in my opinion, he is the greatest tight end of all time. You know, he was so versatile. He had great hands. He was an amazing blocker. His bread and butter with Tom Brady was that seam route. They just connected on that route every time beautifully. He was a bruiser. He would just take motherfuckers out. So the fact that he spent the majority of his career injured is not a shock. It's not shocking that he retired just because he has taken a beating his entire career, but he put it all out on the field. I really enjoyed the hell out of Gronkowski's career. He was a hilarious football player, too. Just he had awesome personality, fine as hell also. So there you go. So he was a second round pick back in 2010 by the New England Patriots. He did end his career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He played the last two seasons there because, of course, he had to play with his homeboy Tom Brady. He's a four-time Super Bowl champion, won three of those with New England, one with the Tampa Bay Bucs. He ended up winning Comeback Player of the Year years ago when he was with New England because he missed basically the entire season 1 year due to, like, I think he had, like, an ACL injury and then a... I think that was the year it was either his elbow or his shoulder. Regardless, dude's had basically every bone on his body injured. I'm probably even his dick, too, because I'm sure he's had plenty of broads all up on that his entire career. But he's also a four-time first All-Pro. And then he was the receiving TD leader in 2011. Now, that says a lot because he's a tight end. And he led the league in receiving TDs in a season. So that's nuts. And then actual records he owns league-wide that are all-time records for tight ends. He's got the most TDs in a season with 17. Most TDs in a postseason with 15. Most TDs in the postseason with 15. Most total TDs in a season at 18. Most 100-yard games by a tight end with 32. He ends his career with 621 receptions, 9,286 yards, and 92 touchdowns. He's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer. And like I said, in my opinion, he is the greatest tight end of all time. And there's a lot, especially over the years. You know, Travis Kelce, who's currently in the league, he's right there on his heels. You got, what's his face out in San Francisco? Oh, my God. I'm so drawing a blank on what's his face out in San Francisco. What y'all know who I'm talking about. He's great. But then you also have like Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates. There's been some great tight ends throughout the history of the game. But in my personal opinion, Rob Gronkowski is number one. He showed up every game. Like I said, he played injured. When he played in the Super Bowl with the year he came back with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, his first year that he came back, he wasn't that great, but he was good. And he didn't have a bunch of statistical blowout games like he normally does in the regular season. But come Super Bowl time, that dude showed up and he made the big plays when he needed to. So you got to give it up to Rob Gronkowski. That guy, he was a great football player. I enjoyed the shit out of that dude's career. And whatever he does in retirement, he's got many options because he's also got a great personality as well. And what I also love about Gronk is that he has no problems playing the stupid idiot role. There's so many commercials that he's in, and he's just like, duh, me, Rob. And he doesn't give a shit if you all think he's stupidly hilarious. Because I think he's stupidly hilarious, and he's made a shit ton of money doing it. And congrats to you, Rob Gronkowski, for not only having a great NFL career, but for taking that awesome personality of yours and making some money off of it. And then in some somber NFL news, this especially for the Baltimore Ravens this week. Now, I think it was on Tuesday. Yeah, it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. Their linebacker, Jalen Ferguson, he died at 26 years old. Still no cause of death yet. But that was very shocking because, I mean, 26-year-old, he still plays in the league. Hey, man, that's life. But that was very sad news and for the Baltimore Ravens. And then the following day, defensive tackle, legend, Tony Siragusa used to play for the Baltimore Ravens, won a Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens, also played with the Indianapolis Colts as well, and spent the last many years of his retirement as a sideline reporter for Fox, I believe. And he died the following day at 55 years old. Very sad because, I mean, he was a legend. He was just, I totally remember Siragusa's career. He was one of my favorite players to watch, and especially that year that the Baltimore Ravens won the Super Bowl. That defense was stacked, and he was part of it. And he was also a very good sideline reporter as well. So that was very sad week for the Baltimore Ravens. Now let's move on to some good stuff to end today's show. We're going to end today's show since Rob Gronkowski announced his retirement. Today's top five list is going to be the top five Rob Gronkowski moments of his career. So let's go ahead and just start it off with a couple of honorable mentions. Like I said, his personality was always made him a fun player. And a couple of honorable mentions that I wanted to mention that were personality-based are his absolute obsession with the number 69. Yes, he would be a total child about the number 69, and I fucking love that because that's my sense of humor. I have a total childish sense of humor as well, and all the time he would be making, as a matter of fact, when he scored like he caught his 69th career touchdown, he made sure to kind of make light of that. And then I remember when I can't remember which Super Bowl it was that the Patriots won because there were so many. But he wore a jersey with the number 69 on it at the parade. And so I just thought it was hilarious, his obsession with the number 69 and how he would always make sexual innuendos with the press and the media and go as far as he could with the number 69. Also, another one of my favorite Rob Gronkowski moments was after a game in the locker room. It was a big game. I can't remember what game it was. I just remember this moment with the press. And they were like, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do after this big game? And he just looks at the camera and goes, "Yo soy fiesta." And it was just so fucking stupid. And it was such a great Gronk moment. So those are just a couple of honorable mentions. And now let's get into the top five Gronk moments, starting with number five. It was in 2014 versus the Denver Broncos when he played with the New England Patriots. It was just a regular season game. But you'll remember it because it's probably one of his biggest career highlights ever, where Tom Brady throws him a touchdown pass, and it ended up being this crazy, like, one-handed catch that, like, no tight end's going to make this catch. And he just, boom, makes this insane catch. Even Tom Brady runs up to him and goes, "How the fuck did you catch that, man?" And the coaches on the sideline are like, "What the hell just happened?" So that was that always, to me, whenever I think of Gronk, that is a highlight in my head that I've always just remembered because I remember watching it in real time. If I remember correctly, it was even like a Sunday night football or a Monday night game. Regardless, it was an amazing catch. And even Tom Brady was like, "How the fuck did you catch that?" So that's number five. Number four on my top five Gronk moments is Super Bowl 55 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah, like I said, that season, he started out really solid, but then he got injured. I believe that was the year he broke his ribs. I could be confusing that with last year. I might be confusing that with last year. Regardless, he didn't have that amazing of a regular season with the Bucs. He was good. He showed up. He played great games. He needed to do what he needed to do. But the Super Bowl was when he showed out. And he ended up with six catches for 67 yards. Just missed out on his favorite number, 69, right there. I'm sure he noticed that, too, by the way. And he had two touchdowns. Or as he and Tom Brady call them, "You had two tutties! You had two tutties! Oh, my God! You had two tutties!" Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. Two tutties. Those two tutties, Gronk. And also, in that game, he and Tom Brady passed Joe Montana and Jerry Rice for the most postseason touchdowns in NFL history, which is a huge accomplishment. And that's between a quarterback and a tight end, which is crazy. So that's my number four moment. My number three top five Gronk moment is in the 2015 AFC Championship versus the Denver Broncos. Now, unfortunately, this game ended up being a loss for the Patriots, but it was the performance of a lifetime for Rob Gronkowski. I mean, his stat line alone for a tight end is nuts. His stat line for this game was 15 catches for 144 yards and a touchdown. That is fucking nuts. But also, where he shined was on the final drive of the game. The Patriots had 90 seconds left to go. They were down 8 points. And there was this 4th-and-10 play where it was at their own, like, 30-yard line-ish, something like that. But it was 4th-and-10, and Tom Brady, of course, finds his dude Rob Gronkowski, who catches a 40-yard pass. Then they get all the way down to the Denver 10-yard line. And basically, Brady finds Rob Gronkowski kind of in the flat. And Rob's able to run in and jump over for the 4-yard, potentially game-winning touchdown. Now, the New England needed the two-point conversion, obviously, to tie up the game. And unfortunately, the two-point conversion failed. It was a pass to Julian Edelman. He ended up dropping the pass. So that is why they lost, but it was an amazing game. It was an amazing drive, and it was an amazing stat line from a tight end with 15 catches, 144 yards, and a touchdown. That is absolutely insane, and he was the reason why they actually had a chance to possibly tie that game up in the end. Then at number two on my top five Gronk moments, I have the 2011 versus the Washington Redskins. This was just a regular season game. Now, if you think that last stat line that I threw at you was impressive, listen to this one. He had 6 catches for 160 yards. He missed 69 by 9 yards, by the way. I'm sure he notices that as well, for 2 touchdowns. And in this game, and now the Patriots did kick the shit out of Washington in this game, but it's just that stat line alone is amazing. But he also had this amazing play where he catches the ball on the sideline. Now, he's got like 2 or 3 defenders in front of him. So the catch alone was impressive. So when he lands, he's right on the sideline. And instead of being knocked out of bounds, which is what you should do, since Rob Gronkowski is a huge-ass motherfucker, he was able to barrel through these motherfuckers and keep trucking down the fucking field another like 20 yards. And he even had dudes hanging off of him down the way, and they finally were able to bring him down. But it was just one of the most dominating performances from a tight end you will ever see in a game. So that was number two. And then number one on my top five Gronk moments, 2017 regular season game versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. One of the most amazing fourth quarter drives you will ever see, not only by just a team, but Gronkowski was the dude. When Tom Brady needed to just throw the ball to anybody, he knew in this game he could 100% rely on Rob Gronkowski. So there was a fourth quarter drive. They trailed by 5 with 2 minutes left to go. 4 out of the 5, Gronkowski was targeted 5 times, and he caught 4 of the passes. So he was all reliable the whole way down the field. But he made these insane catches, like insane. Of course, the seam route was 2 of them. But then he made this shoestring catch where it like almost hit the ground. But luckily, the way the ball landed, it just landed kind of like right on his shoes. He was able to pick it up and head towards get the Patriots in scoring position. They got him back down to like the 4-yard line, and then they ended up scoring. Getting a 2-point conversion, which was caught by Rob Gronkowski, taking the lead over the Pittsburgh Steelers in that game. And I remember that season because Pittsburgh was actually competitive that year. And so it was a game that actually mattered. It was a game on the line, and they were in Pittsburgh as well. So that was a huge game by the Patriots, huge game by Rob Gronkowski. And I out of watching all the highlights that I checked out this week of when I was putting together this list, it was definitely one of the most impressive performances. While the stat line isn't as explosive as the last two stat lines I got you, this fourth quarter drive, it was beautiful from both he and Tom Brady for sure. It was great. And Rob Gronkowski, man, you had one of the greatest careers. You were so much fun to watch. I can't wait to see what you do in the future. I'm sure it's going to be something fun because that's just the type of dude he is. And I'm looking forward to see him get inducted into the Hall of Fame, because you know that dude's the first ballot Hall of Famer. Like I said, in my opinion, he's the greatest tight end of all time. But you can definitely debate about it. There's a lot of guys out there throughout the history of the league, even beyond the ones that I named off the top of my head. But George Kittle, that's who I was thinking of. I knew I would think of his name. George fucking Kittle is the 49ers tight end that I was struggling to remember. I knew I'd get it. I'm glad I got it before the end of the show. But anyways, you know, there's been some great tight ends throughout the history of the league. They continue to get better. But Gronk, there was nothing like Gronk. He was so big. He was so strong. He was so fast. And he and Tom Brady had a beautiful connection with each other. And it was a great career to watch. So yo soy fiesta. And I'm sure you're going to have a lot of 69ing to do now that you're retired. So have fun, Gronk. And enjoy the weekend of sports. Hook 'em horns. Even though we're not playing this weekend in the College Baseball World Series, please, please, Ole Miss, please, please beat the Oklahoma Sooners. All right, y'all, have a good weekend, and I will talk to you all on Monday.